Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
And it's the Luke and Pete Show. It's a Thursday, the 21st of January 2021. Oh my God, it's 21-21, baby.
Yeah.
21-1-21.
Yeah, 21-1-21. Yeah, the Americans would have something to say about that, though, wouldn't they?
They would, but they can keep quiet for crying. So we won 21-21. Lovely old job. Hey, Luke, we've got what can only be described as an Instagram page.
Oh, good.
Yeah, pop it. I'm imagining what's up there. Orangutans, just pictures of things we've talked about, ejector seats, things like that.
An orangutan in an ejector seat with a parachute, about to do something. About to, I don't know,
smash land.
Battery collection.
Yeah. So check that out if you can. It's really simple and really easy. It's just Luke and Pete Show. That's what it is. Yeah,
on Luke the Instagram. And Pete Show. Maybe we'll do some extra stuff on there. When that corrals us and makes us do more work, I imagine some of it will end up on the Luke and Pete Show Instagram feed. So do check it out, as Pete says. How you doing this week, Peter? I forgot to mention to you on Monday something that's right up your street. Let's just get straight into it.
Right.
And say that the company Cadillac, who obviously are well known for making cars, those massive cars that you probably couldn't even fit down a street in the UK. I presume they're still making vehicles. I imagine they're still making modern cars as well. But at a some kind of convention or trade fair called CES 2021. Don't know what CES stands for. Don't
entertainment show. No, electronic show.
Electronic
consumer
show.
Electronic show.
Consumer Electronics Show, great. Apparently, and I've seen the video, and it's mostly kind of artist impressions, kind of impressionistic kind of stuff, presented by a man who kind of looks like he was developed and hatched in a Steve Jobs factory, talking about, this is a long run-up, a long build-up to say, the first air taxi, a flying car. It looks like an oversized drone with quite a futuristic cabin on it. So, you know, I don't know if anyone listening has ever been to pod parking at Heathrow Terminal 5, where you park your car up and then you get an autonomous vehicle which takes you to the terminal. It looks a bit like that with massive drone rotors on it and it flies around.
Yeah, it looks like something out of Blade Runner, doesn't it? Because of the kind of windscreen is very interesting. It seems very wasteful, though. I think it only fits two or three people, doesn't it?
How would it work?
Well, it's just a load of gyroscopes and a couple of rotors, isn't it? It's just a drone, isn't it? It's just a drone with a human in it.
Well, so it's basically, so I'm right if I, because that was a guess, but so I'm right in saying that it would just be a an oversized drone, basically.
I'm fairly certain that as a lot of these things kind of happen, I thought they'd already had flying taxis and flying cop cars in Dubai. Am I wrong?
They've got some kind of weird drone style motorbike for the police in some parts of Dubai, I believe. But I've never been there. I've only seen the videos. But interestingly, it kind of made me excited to watch the video of the air taxi because.
Yeah.
Cadillac are owned by General Motors, right? And General Motors are this massive, historic company in the US that obviously are well known for making cars. But if you look at General Motors' Twitter Biog. It says, we're on a journey to create a world with zero crashes, zero emissions and zero congestion. Let us show you how we'll get there. And that's quite a futuristic statement for a company, isn't it? It's quite exciting. Yeah.
I mean, you're very much relying on the electricity companies to create clean energy, aren't you there? Where you get the electricity from? Is it dirty or is it clean?
There's loads of electricity everywhere though, mate. It's all around you. Yeah, I'm surrounded by it right now.
Solar batteries, mate. Loads of batteries. Loads of GP32s.
When I sent you the video of this, you said you wouldn't get in it.
No, I mean, I would need assurances that it would fly, that each rotor... The thing is, all four rotors have to be working or else you are fuckerooed. So you would need guarantees that they were, you know, at least two autonomous vehicles in one, if you know what I mean. So if one goes down, the other one doesn't go down. Does that make sense? And you could also land with just one.
For some reason,
helicopters are so frightening.
Yeah, but for some reason, the smaller aircraft that don't seem to go as fast... or as high, it doesn't really frighten me as much. Do you understand what I mean?
The video has a New York skyline and it's taken off on top of a skyscraper. How high do you want it to be?
Yeah, true. I don't know, it's hard to explain, but if when it comes to actual proper air travel, I don't get anxious or nervous at all, apart from the takeoff, which I find quite frightening.
Right.
So I'm not nervous about the landing or cruising or anything like that or turbulence, but the takeoff to me feels like the highest risk category of plane travel.
The only ones I sort of get, I don't think I would enjoy. You know, remember that the Chinese gave the Tongans a plane about 7 years ago, and it was just a freebie to go. Hey, do you want to get in bed or whatever? And those planes aren't licensed to fly over like the EU or anything. It's a big no-no. They've not really been classified. It's those ones that you just worry have been based on old like USSR designs from the 70s, and they've just kind of upgraded the dashboard and put LCD screens in. They're the ones that I sort of go, yeah, the ones that take the whole runway to lift off because the engines aren't powerful enough. It's stuff like that. So I don't have a massive problem with planes that have been road tested for 30 years, you know, the 747, things like that. Most pilots know how to manage things if they go wrong. It's the ones that are new, but are also based on very old designs.
But so is that how you tell then? So if it takes a long time to build up the speed to take off, is that how you tell it's an old plane? Because to me, a lot of the BA planes seem pretty old. Like some of them have still got like ashtray things in the armrest and stuff.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of them are very old. And I think this pandemic has killed... Is it the 747? That was a really popular one, wasn't it? I think the pandemic has just seen that they just won't fly anymore. They'll never come back into service.
Huh.
I bought a little fuel gauge on eBay. I'm not even like an air enthusiast. I just like people... I like really complex machinery being wrangled by intelligent men. That's my kink. Just watching watching like men explain why... some planes crash and some planes don't, and it's all because they didn't look at the folder enough.
nobody bothered looking at the instructions.
Yeah. Speaking of men dangerously underqualified to wrangle machinery,
hello.
I bought a car at the weekend.
What?
I cannot drive. But
you just got your scooter.
I know, but I need to learn to drive, but I can't have a driving lesson because of the lockdown. So
you
I was
can't
like,
teach
well,
yourself how to drive just because of the lockdown. You can't just take it to the road.
Well, the police will just be worried about something. They'll go, I'll crash into an orphanage, killing kids left, right and centre, and the policeman will come over and go, sir, are you wearing a mask? I'll go, no, and he'll slap a £1,000 fine on me. He'll ignore everything else that I've done, I would say.
Seriously, though... We can all make funny, frivolous jokes about this, Donaldson, but you've just bought a scooter, you've only just got it on the road, and you can't have driving lessons at the moment. So what's your tactic here?
My tactic is explaining to my partner that she needs to help me do some driving.
Oh, my goodness. You know, that is the quickest shortcut to the breakdown in the relationship is one teaches the other how to drive.
Yeah, I completely agree. But look... I'm going to need to learn to drive at some point. I've got driving lessons booked, or I had driving lessons booked in January, but I couldn't do them because of bloody lockdown. So I've got it ready. I can familiarise myself with the controls. I can read the manual. I think this is the most sensible thing I've ever done, Luke.
What car did you buy?
A little Fiat 500.
What, did you buy it brand new?
No. God, no. Cars are bloody expensive. And I rang up the bloke, and he sounded like... who's the fellow who does the Italian bloke who does the cooking on this morning?
Gino DiCampo.
He sounded like Gino DiCampo. He sounded so much like Gino DiCampo. And I paid for it. And then this other woman rang me up and tried to sell me some kind of ceramic coating.
Oh, I bet they did. I bet you've got people queuing up trying to sell you shit. If you're buying a car, you probably spent about 20 grand on it, did you?
No, I didn't. But I will familiarise myself with the controls. It's an automatic, so, I mean, what is there to learn? Forward, backwards, what else? Out of the radio?
I've got an automatic. My car's automatic as well. It's much easier for driving around London. I originally bought it because Mimi's obviously American.
Oh, yes, of course, yeah.
Yeah, but she's never once driven it, so it doesn't make any difference. But the what I was going to say to you was, my friend Tommy has got a Fiat 500, and... He's got long blonde hair, right? And what he does is he makes sure his hair is not tucked behind his ears or tucked back, so it's hanging over his face partly so he looks like a girl. And he says every single time he gets to a junction, people just let him out because they assume, because it's a Fiat 500 and he's got long blonde hair, he's an attractive woman, and men are pathetic, and they just let him out every time.
I mean, look, I didn't realise that the Fiat 500 was a lady's car. I'm not a driver. I don't know all of the misogynists' rules of the road.
I'm not saying Fiat 500 is or isn't. I don't think there's any such thing as a man or a woman's car. But I'm just saying, people, rightly or wrongly, make an assumption.
Laurent Robert's got one. I saw that on Instagram. He's the only Instagram influencer worth a coin, in my opinion.
He
just smokes cigars. Sigurd, yeah, well, he influenced me into buying a Fiat 500 and considering a career and considering getting involved in some cigar smoking. All he does is drink champagne, eat amazing seafood, and smoke big old hoagie cigars. It really is a trip, that man's Instagram page.
This feeds in perfectly. This development feeds in perfectly to my long-held theory about you, that you think about things way too much or you don't think about them at all. You've had your scooter 5 minutes.
Yeah. And I've enjoyed it.
What's going to happen to your scooter now?
It's getting thrown in the canal. That's what's happening to it.
Is it safe? I'll buy it off you. Is it safe? Because I will buy it.
What do you mean, is it safe? No, I will use, but like, you can use both a scooter and a little car. I mean, legally, I'm only allowed to use that scooter, and I've got to have a lesson. I've got to have another exam in a year's time anyway. So yeah,
true.
Oh,
all right,
Lordy.
Well, it's an amazing development in the world of dancers. So have you got it in the house at the moment? Have you parked it in the driveway or something?
It's not arrived yet. She tried to sell me some ceramics this afternoon, and I'm just waiting
for it. It's never going to arrive, mate. Have you paid
honestly,
for it?
Pay for it. It was from a Fiat dealership. I think I'm all right.
They saw you coming, mate.
Can I
just jump in very briefly and say that on Monday I started telling a Brexit story, but you sidetracked me. I think we got sidetracked or something. No, it's not your fault. It's probably mine for having a memory like a sieve. But the story I wanted to talk to you about was about a driver travelling from the UK to Holland. And when he arrived, he had his ham sandwiches confiscated.
Have you seen that? Fun. It's just fun.
In the video, the very no-nonsense Dutchman said to him, "Do you have meat on all the bread? Do you have meat on all the bread?" And the guy's going, "Yeah." He said, "Well, then we're taking all of it. We're taking it." And I don't really know what to think, because on one hand, it's like it's really pathetic and really kind of
petty,
jobs worthy, isn't it? But at the same time, it's almost like, well, sorry, Brexit people, but this is the kind of thing you're after, because apparently you can't bring meat or dairy products from a non-EU country into the EU without particular licences. And obviously, you're not going to fill out some paperwork for a sandwich. If I was him, I'd have just smashed them straight away, just ate them all. Like that woman on that plane back from Spain who just drank that whole bottle of spirits rather than give it away.
Yeah, it's one of those things where... I mean, I'm fairly certain it's because the EU have certain food standards that, you know, that this person can't make it clear where, you know, what those standards is. So if you came from England like now and went,
Excuse me, this is Marks and Spencer. That's what I was
with the meat paste sandwich. With a meat paste. I mean, to be fair, we probably imported all the fucking meat from the EU anyway. So you can back up with the borders with the meat paste sandwich going, I'm eating this meat paste sandwich. And go, well, we don't know where that's come from. We don't know what, you know, you could be selling that and poisoning the people of the EU, and also probably disease and stuff, I imagine. I mean, TED talk on EU safe, food safety standards.
But I know, do you know what? The type of person you've got to be a good border guard, it's almost about it's almost like being a traffic warden, right? You've got to be a real stickler for the detail, because if you or I was a border guard, you know, day three of our job, we'd probably have a hangover. Yeah, whatever, it's come through. What, I can't be bothered. It's fine. And but obviously these guys, the very nature of their job means they can't do that, because ultimately it's just a fucking sandwich. What's going to happen? He's going to eat it. That's what's going to happen, right? Yeah, nothing. You're not going to get, like, I understand the idea that, for example, bringing an entire pig into a country might have swine flu or foot and mouth. I get that. This is just a sandwich, right? So on one hand, I'm ambivalent, really, because on one hand, I'm like, well, this is what you fucking voted for, you absolute bellends. On the other hand, it's like, it's just a sandwich. Can't we all just be pals?
I hope we have like a shortage of Beatles records and Levi jeans, and we're forced to etch our records in old X-rays. I love the design of the I love the architecture of the DDR, sort of East Germany.
Yeah. I was just going to say, did you see that? I don't know if you've seen the documentary Searching for Sugar Man about a guy who doesn't know how popular he is in apartheid South Africa.
Yes.
It's worth watching. It's brilliant. He's a singer-songwriter, did nothing in the US, and then just becomes huge in South Africa without even knowing it, because of people who are kind of traveling to South Africa and taking these records, and they're getting copied and copied and copied. And it's an amazing story. But anyway, as part of the documentary, because the apartheid regime was absolutely sickening, deplorable, and astonishingly corrupt as well, these kind of things could go on, but also they had a very, very heavy-handed censorship regime. So any record that was seen to be perhaps undermining the apartheid regime would be censored. And they had people who would literally be employed to listen to 12-inch vinyl records and scratch up the songs they thought weren't suitable.
Oh, like individual songs.
So all these people scratching these records. It's a mad thing to think about that.
How many songs were talking about apartheid? That spitting image one? Free Nelson Mandela.
I don't think it's just about that. I think it's just about any kind of, to be honest, it's not massively different to like any kind of right wing government not wanting anything that could be seen as maybe vaguely socialist or any kind of political idea that challenges the norm, I suppose. It wasn't songs that specifically relating to apartheid. It's more just things that they think would undermine the regime, but it's just quite interesting, right? Anyway, but Pete, the other thing I wanted to mention to you before we have a break and go to emails was it actually kind of vaguely relates to records, because you know that the most valuable records are the ones that have got like misprints on them and stuff. So like you get a record that's worth hundreds of thousands because it's a Beatles record and it's got one of the names of the John Lennon spelt wrong or something.
John Lennon,
highly collectible.
John Lennon. They in Japan, they had last week, I think it was Asahi, released a beer, and they spelt lager, L-A-G-A-R, which is enjoyable. They still put them out. So they're going to be collector's items.
Well, not in your house, they won't.
Not in my house, no. Well, I've said it before. My dad, I had to buy a new keyboard because I spilt that Tisky you bought me into it. That's 50 quid I won't get back. My dad, I think I told you before, my dad bought me a Newcastle United, when Alan Shearer retired, Newcastle Brown released a commemorative Alan Shearer with his hand in the air bottle. And my dad sort of kept it for me for about a month, and they drank it and then steamed off the bottle label and put it on another bottle, thereby creating this horrible kind of like Frankenstein fake bottle of commemorative Newcastle Brown.
I like a Nuki Brown, I'll tell you. It has to be ice cold, though.
Nice.
But I do like a Nuki
lovely.
Brown. So this story related to printing of things is that so apparently there was a $20 banknote called the Del Monte banknote, right? It's about to go at auction. Probably, I would say it's probably going to fetch hundreds of thousands of dollars. And the reason it's so valuable is because when it was being printed, somehow or another, a Del Monte sticker from a banana fell into the machine, got stuck to one of the banknotes, and then got printed over the top of the serial number, and it's still attached to the note.
Oh, so that's like, fantastic.
And apparently, printing slip-ups happen quite regularly with things getting in the machine or things not working properly, but generally speaking, the foreign bodies that are present on the banknote just disappear or drop off. This Del Monte stick is still on the banknote. And it's attracting massive attention in those kind of areas of society where people collect these types of things. So, like, apparently in the past, they're all printed at a place called Fort Worth, which I think is in Texas. And in the past, things have been found with plasters, bits of paper, little bits of sellotape, little wood shavings, and then printed over the top. And they're quite collectible. So notophilists or notophilists are people who collect banknotes. And this could be a very, very expensive item at auction. The most expensive banknote ever sold was a very rare $10,000 bill from 1934, which actually ended up selling for $384,000. But anyway, people are climbing over themselves to get the banknote, which still says Ecuador Del Monte quality on a sticker on it under the serial number. Now that's crucial. You can't just put a Del Monte sticker on a banknote and try and sell it for $100,000. It's got to be under the printed serial number to be worth anything.
Yeah, would you not sort of do that and kind of, I mean, I imagine they run a pretty tight ship at Fort Worth. Lovely part of Dallas. Lovely, lovely part of the world. I imagine they run a pretty tight ship that you can't make off with dollar bills left, right and centre. But could you not create a sensation and know where, you know, which shop it's going to go to? Create a little sort
open
of...
open to corruption, I guess.
I think
open
so,
to
yeah.
corruption, yeah. Yeah. Listen, let's have a quick break, Peter. When we come back, we'll do an email. I've got another one for the so-called expert on Monday who poo-pooed my parachute chat. One of the listeners has got my back and he's come in with another solution relating to parachutes and passenger liners. I'm going to tell you all about it after this break.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
This week at Sukarnov.
Me and Luke have been whiling away the lockdown with our usual nonsense on the Luke and Pete Show. Here's a quick taste of the kind of challenges we've been setting for ourselves.
Give us any nation and I'll tell you why they're dirty.
All right, I'll do it now.
Italy. Yeah. It looks like a sexy boot.
There's also a brand new episode of On the Continent, your weekly guide to the sublime and frequently ridiculous in European football. Find it over on Football Ramble Presents every Thursday.
Neymar's responded to this in kind that they forgot to tell you how to win titles. Then Alvaro has responded with a picture of Pelé with three World Cups going... in the eternal shadow of the king.
This reminds me of Stormzy and Wiley. The spies that they have.
All that and a whole lot more at Sukarnov.
It's the Luke and Pete Show. It's Thursday, and this is part two of the show. That's as functional and as stripped down as I could possibly announce this part of the experience. We've got some emails, Luke. Do you want to kick off with yours? You were promising some liar talking about the parachute nonsense.
Very important to reiterate that part you heard before the break. That was very much part one. This is part two. Hello@lukeandpeteshow.com is the email address for all your missives. I did trial run promo trailer an email about parachutes, and I'm going to do it right now. It's from Sam, who says, hi, guys, just listening to your episodes about parachutes on passenger planes got me thinking, what about this, all you pilot experts out there? Instead of having a parachute for each person, why don't we simplify it and have five or six massive parachutes attached to the plane itself, and in an emergency, the plane releases them and we just float gently down to the ground?
Right? Isn't that what happened in Batman?
Or a massive balloon inflates on top of the plane and turns it into a blimp. Let me know your thoughts, Sam. Now, I'm on board, Sam, with the first one. The second one, you've gone off piste there. You're on your own. Pete, what's your initial reaction to that?
Going too fast to turn into a blimp. Everything's just going too fast. There's too many forces, for crying out loud. There's no oxygen up high. There's so many problems with this.
Yeah, you need to be on nodding terms with modern ballistics, Sam, if you're going to kind of start chatting this stuff. But I do like the idea of you know, like on a boat or a ship, you have a life raft, which is designed to hold a certain amount of people.
Mm.
Presumably as some kind of sort of air-floating vessel that could be a bit like a life raft, i.e. you could pile a load of people into it and then float down with a massive parachute. It's not attached to the plane's fuselage itself.
Right.
But perhaps a different kind of mixture of the two solutions.
But I mean, would you not fall out of the big dinghy, the big floating dinghy?
It'd have to have sides. It'd have to have walls, inflatable walls.
Oh, like walls. Oh, that'll keep them in. That'll keep little walls on the side of the paddling pool. Just a little paddling pool. Yeah. That'll be
all
absolutely
I'm saying
fine.
Is, when you go on holiday next, take a paddling pool with you. You never know. Just in case. Yeah.
Well, Pilot Claude actually popped in to our lives last week as well. Convertible roof on a plane. This would mean that presumably everyone would have ejection seats. There's another big problem, because with ejection seats, 10 to 20% 10% of all cases we know of have been fatal. It's not uncommon to get serious head, neck, back injuries from ejection. This is, of course, practically all with the context that they are highly trained pilots. Sorry for rambling on.
Who's going to pull the ejector seat? Say for every single person on the passenger plane has got an ejector seat. Is it one person that pulls it? Right, is everyone ready?
Or it's like a vote. Is it first past the post, or is it a college, like, electoral college system?
a quick vote on one of those seat back TV displays where they have quizzes on. It's like a quick vote. And if you get over 50, they all just shoot up. It's like a referendum.
Yeah, I've got a lot of time for that. That's very enjoyable.
I'm going to change trains completely, or change planes completely, and just quickly avail you of this story from Jamie, who says, hi guys, towards the end of one of last week's shows, Luke said the famous childhood lie of Michael Jackson came to my house. You remember that, Peter?
Yes, I remember that.
Yeah. And Jamie says, this reminded me of a childhood story of mine that I've been meaning to write in about for a while. I assure you, every word of the following story is absolutely true as I remember it, even though to this day it sounds crazy. It's 1997 and I am 10 years old and in my first school in Egham in Surrey. Beautiful part of the world, Egham. I think outside Egham train station, there might even be a Ferrari garage. It's a very affluent part of the country. You've been there, Peter?
I've never been to Egham, no. I'm sorry, I can't add anything to Egham. I can't over-egg this story.
No, it's the other side of London to where you are, so you probably wouldn't use it. He says, anyway, it's summer and we are playing rounders on the field out the back of the school. So he's at his school in Egham in 1997, they're playing rounders. We see a big old blacked out car, drive into the school. And a small man gets out with three or four other larger men. They walk towards us on the school field. The smaller guy is Michael Jackson, right? Who then proceeds to walk around the school field, shaking hands with the kids and a couple of the teachers. This is Michael Jackson in the mid-90s, and we are going absolutely mental, right? I later found out he was playing shows at Wembley, so Michael Jackson being not too far away from the venue made sense. I go home and tell my parents and everyone I know and return to school the next day. It turns out it was a Michael Jackson lookalike who was notorious for doing this type of thing.
Oh, no.
He had hired a limo and bodyguards to walk around the school. A bit weird, but it still makes me laugh whenever I hear his name mentioned. To make up for the injustice of not meeting Michael Jackson, a well-known, unnameable red-top newspaper who picked up on this story sent a celebrity to our school to sign autographs a week later as a replacement. Can you guess who it was, Peter?
Was it Jeff Capes?
Oh, nice. 97's a bit late for Capes, isn't it?
Oh, right, sorry, yeah. Was it Zig and Zag? Or Zig or Zag?
You're getting warmer. One more guess. 1997.
Mr. Blobby.
Oh, God, very nice. No, it was Anthea Turner.
Oh, nice. Nice, nice, nice. She's lovely. She used to do, I used to do my radio show. She used to be downstairs doing a radio show. She's bloody lovely.
Jamie says when he moved house 3 years later, when he moved house three years ago, he found her signed picture among some very old paperwork. Picture of Anthea Turner with the kids for everyone at school in the newspaper a couple of days later. Essentially, this is a story of how I met Anthea Turner because I thought I met Michael Jackson. For me, they're not on the same level. But anyway, thanks very much, Jamie. My story. Tell us more about your experiences with Anthea Turner, Peter. I know Alan Partridge is a big fan of Anthea's. What about you?
She's very nice. Just when she walked around the building, just very happy-go-lucky. Didn't seem kind of bowed by her years in show business. Just great news.
Good. What's she up to now? Do you know?
She's sitting on the back of a flatbed truck watching a motorbike guy.
Didn't she get set on fire by accident?
Yeah, it was like a Kickstarter guy. He came out the back of a truck, and some kind of pyrotechnics was supposed to go off, and she just went all over the place.
And she's not let it affect damaged. Her. It's a lesson for all of us there. She's not let it hold her back, is she?
Lordy.
All right, I think that's about. I mean, listen, how do you follow that? You probably can't. So I think it's about time we got out of here, Peter. I'll leave you to take it away.
Well, we're out of here. If you want to get to the show, it's really easy. hello@lukeandpeteshow.com. You can also find us on Twitter @lukeandpeteshow. You can also find us on Instagram as well. Brand new content coming at you hard in the face and the ears. Luke and Pete Show. Check it out if you can. And we'll be back on Monday for more of this toss.
This was a Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we're way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.